Oklahoma faces a projected $1.3 billion budget shortfall in the next fiscal year, which could mean cuts to vital services like mental health, education, and corrections. A few ideas are floating around the legislature to generate more revenue or to save money, like delaying implementation of the individual income tax cuts, tax credit reform, and criminal justice reform. But so far, the legislature has not passed any big sweeping bills. You're listening to Oklahoma Voices. I'm Jacob McClelland. On today's show, we'll talk with State Senator Mike Mazie. The Tulsa Republican is chair of the Oklahoma Senate Finance Committee, and he's had his hands in several different pieces of legislation this year that deal with the budget. This interview was recorded last Tuesday in Mazie's Capitol office. We started by talking about his proposed legislation that would delay implementation of the income tax cuts.
Our goal was to get a wide variety of financial reform options out of the Senate Finance Committee so we could have lots of engagement by individual senators and transparency, input and feedback from the community as well. At the current time, we didn't run any of those big major financial reform items through the traditional process and deadlines that the Senate have, but all of those options, whether it's reduction in tax credit costs, dedicated cash flow changes from off-the-top monies, and even the delay of the tax cut, could come back through the actual budget process as we work towards an actual framework to deal with this year's financial crisis.
Now, that the delay of implementation of the individual income tax cuts didn't receive a whole lot of support from leadership at the time. Have you heard anything to suggest otherwise, that this could be something that that could be renewed and that discussion brought to the floor in any way?
There's an interesting amount of feedback when you talk about delaying the tax cut. I come from one of the most conservative Republican districts in the state, in South Tulsa, and every time I talk to constituents, they say it's financially pragmatic and somewhat of a no-brainer to delay the tax cut because the original threshold that was set for the tax cut to even begin was a $6.9 billion revenue mark. We never achieved that, and right now we're at a $5.8 billion revenue mark. So out there in our districts, there's a lot of support for delaying the tax cut. Amongst senators in the Oklahoma Senate, there's a large number of Republican senators that think it's something that we have to consider, whether or not this latest revenue shortfall, the second one that we've been hit with, changes the minds of some of the folks in the Capitol in leadership positions. I don't really know at this point, but I do know there's a tremendous amount of support both outside of this building and inside the building to take the pragmatic step of delaying the tax cut, because it would help our current financial dilemma by $188 million.
Certainly not enough to resolve all of the problems, but one step towards that $1.3 billion projected shortfall for the upcoming fiscal year.
Correct. There's no one item that's a magic elixir to dealing with the financial crisis. For us to be prudent and responsible when it comes to funding core services like education, public safety, roads and bridges, we have to look at a combination of targeted spending cuts, specific financial reform that increases recurring revenue, taking money off the table from special interest tax credits that just don't need the money. If we're going to do this right, we have to look at a wide variety of options and not depend on one-time spending gimmicks or borrowing money.
Let's talk a little bit. Well, actually, I want to talk about all of those things that you just mentioned, but let's kind of start with those tax credits. Mm-hmm. In your mind, I mean, is there a certain number you're looking at that you're looking at saving through tax credit reform?
Well, tax preference items include tax credits, income tax deductions, tax exemptions, and tax rebates. I believe that a prudent approach to saving money in that arena should target approximately $200 million. The current total cost of all those items put together for fiscal year 2015 was literally $2 billion. When I first came to the Oklahoma Senate, that annual cost was around $1.3 billion. So it's grown by $700 million since I've been here, and we just can't afford to do that. At the same time, where we want to lower tax rates for all Oklahomans versus special deals for the well-connected.
Are there any particular, low-hanging fruit, perhaps, that you believe should be considered?
Well, when you bring up low-hanging fruit, my friend in the House, Representative Earl Sears, the chairman of the Budget Committee over there, he and I worked very hard a few years ago to get rid of some of those low-hanging fruit items. For example, there's no longer a tax deduction in Oklahoma for making a political contribution. That was ridiculous. We got rid of that. Now, there are still some items that I think are not necessary in the tax code. For example, there's something called the Energy Efficient Home Tax Credit, whereby a builder gets a tax credit if he provides a certain level of energy efficient standards in his home. Well, what consumers don't want energy efficient standards in their homes these days? It's just not necessary for the industry. We could save literally $4 million if we eliminated that particular tax credit. That's a good example of a special deal for one particular group that has negative effects on the rest of the people in Oklahoma.
How about the zero emissions tax credit, the one for the wind industry? They'd had one of their credits eliminated last year, and as I understand it, kind of under the agreement that the other one would be left alone. Now this one's being looked at again. Is this something that you would consider a prudent tax credit to be looking at now?
Last year, we eliminated, beginning in 2017, the ability for wind farm facilities to qualify for a five-year property tax exemption. So still on the books is the very expensive credit that wind power facilities achieve for just producing power. That's going to cost in fiscal year 16 at least $30 to $35 million. I think that particular tax credit should come down in cost by 25% to 50%, because you're talking about something that over 10 years literally costs $400 million, and the long-term jobs that have resulted from the wind facilities over the last several years are now about 300 jobs. So it's overly generous. It's not really necessary at this point. You could argue that it's done its job to support the development of various wind facilities across the state, but I am one of those that does believe that's a very expensive credit that needs to be reduced or capped so that we can save $20 to $30 million this year.
I guess kind of moving forward, Do you believe the legislature, when considering new tax credits, new incentives, that these are things that should have sunsets automatically written into them, to where they're reviewed within 5 years, 10 years, to make sure that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing?
I have been preaching for years that every tax incentive item should have a sunset date or a reauthorization date, as I like to call them, because without a reauthorization date where members in the era of term limits have to have a moment where they're forced to look at the data, they're forced to look at the actual mathematical numbers of what are the costs, what are the benefits, and do the net benefits in terms of jobs, payroll, and resulting income taxes and sales taxes, do those exceed the costs? So whether it's a 4-year period or a 5-year period, I believe that in order to be accountable to the taxpayers, every tax incentive item should have a reauthorization date at its outset.
Now, of course, Governor Fallon issued a statement. This was several weeks ago when the committee was looking at some of these tax credit reforms, saying this is creating some disincentives for businesses to move here, talking about losing these incentives. What's your response to those criticisms, that kind of that uncertainty, I suppose, in if tax credits will continue to exist, could impede on businesses moving to the state?
No business has 100% certainty about its various cash flow items ad infinitum. It's not the taxpayer's responsibility to create certainty for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. It's actually the responsibility of the recipients of taxpayer credits to prove to the legislature that their special deal, their tax incentive, is providing net economic benefits to the taxpayer. It's their responsibility in a transparent, accountable manner to show that the taxpayers are getting a good return on their investment. Now, having said that, I do believe that the tax incentive programs that are working and creating good high-paying jobs should be continued. They should be reauthorized as we look at how to reform various aspects of the tax code this year. I think it's important to communicate to the business and economic development community that the quality jobs program, the aerospace engineering tax credit, the historic home or historic rehabilitation tax credit are very important incentive programs that have worked effectively and need to be continued.
In her State of the State address, Governor Fallon suggested sales tax exemptions and looking at what other states are exempting as compared to Oklahoma. She mentioned that Oklahoma has many more sales tax exemptions than Texas. Has there been any movement on eliminating some of those sales tax exemptions thus far? And do you see savings there for the state?
I haven't seen any specifics or detail from the governor's finance team on her proposal to generate new sales tax revenue from services that pay sales taxes in other states. I think it's a laudable concept. It's difficult to get off the mat, perhaps. I know there have been some folks working in the House behind the scenes on this issue. We're 8 weeks into session. I still haven't seen any details. I know some of us here have looked at what some of those services are in other states that are taxing services, things like window washing, and pet grooming, and I don't really see how what's being looked at can generate the type of numbers that were talked about earlier in the year.
The governor also suggested a $1.50 sales tax increase on cigarettes. Has that gone anywhere? And I mean, is there the political will at this point to increase the tobacco tax?
Well, an increase of the tobacco tax would be a specific new and higher levy on cigarette taxes. So that would be termed a revenue measure. That revenue bill would have to start in the House, and it would have to get a 3/4 vote before it could proceed to the Senate. And I haven't seen any discussion or work on that issue at all at this point.
Let's talk a little bit about off-the-top funding. That's money that doesn't go through the appropriations process, and it's a big chunk of the state's budget. As I understand, about 3/4 of the state budget doesn't go through appropriations. What are some mechanisms available to the legislature now to look at funding that doesn't go through appropriations and bring it back to the table to see if there are some savings that can be generated from there?
Apportionments are so-called off-the-top money. If you're just looking at the revenues that come in from the taxpayers of Oklahoma, divert approximately 40% away from the general revenue process. This sets aside the federal money that is part of the budget spending component, but not part of what Oklahoma taxpayers are footing the bill for. So there's some very large ticket items that are receiving these off-the-top deposits. And some of them are very important. The teacher's retirement system, for example, that really can't be adjusted because the teacher retirement system is fortunately finally on track to getting fiscally stable. But some adjustments can be made in where some of the other dollars are going. For example, approximately $475 million are taken in by the Oklahoma Tax Commission, and through these off-the-top mechanisms, we send the money back to the counties for certain projects. That in and of itself is a stealth property tax increase. Counties already have the ability to tax the local citizens for their own budgets up to 11 mils in property tax parameters. Well, several of us think that money has to be reduced and counties have to learn to live within their means versus the taxpayer sending us money and then we sending money back to the counties. So there's some savings that can be created there. It's also important to look at the very successful roads program that is dedicated money that goes to state roads and bridges. Fortunately, we've had some major success there the last several years. I think about 2/3 of our deficient bridges have been rehabilitated. We're going to continue to make progress because when I first came into the legislature, we had zero money going for these types of projects. And this year's allocation will be $461 million. And since the program started, there's been $2 billion collected. Part of the program has annual automatic increases set to kick in whether or not there's revenue growth or not. We think one of the adjustments that's very reasonable is to stop the automatic annual increases, leave the base amount of 471 million at work, but put the increases off for a while, that in and of itself would save $60 million.
That's interesting that you mentioned that, because there was one proposal to use a bonding mechanism for transportation. What are your thoughts on that type of proposal? Because to me, it almost seems like that's just essentially taking out a loan to cover expenses for this year.
On the one hand, it's prudent to use bonds for infrastructure, roads and bridge type projects when interest rates are so low. So a certain amount of bonds used to maybe replace some of the dedicated roads money to free up, say, $100 to $200 million might not be a bad idea for 1 to 2 years. But it's a temporary fix. It's not a permanent fix like reducing the cost of tax credits or reducing the cost of off-the-top dedicated money flows. So it needs to be limited in use, and we need to remember that it can only help us for 1 to 2 years. It provides us a little bit of a soft landing while we hope for revenue growth to return. But some of these numbers I've heard, like $450 million worth of bonds for roads, is way out of the realm of being reasonable.
Let's talk a little bit about a proposal by Senator Holt that would raise the cap on the rainy day fund. And this would be kind of a structural change, I suppose, that would help alleviate this problem in the future, future revenue failures in the future. But would that have any kind of impact on the current situation with the budget?
No, the current rainy day fund has a little more than $300 million in it, so it provides us a little bit of flexibility right now. Any discussion about increasing the level by which we can have cash reserves is a good discussion to have. Senator Holt's bill will not help us in the current legislative environment, but it's a worthwhile discussion to have for future years and future legislators who will confront future recessions. That particular legislation, I think, needs a little bit of tuning up because we need to be a little bit more precise about what is the state budget and what isn't the state budget. But I think it's an important discussion.
We've talked about off-the-top money tax credits and looking at those. Looking in those areas for some more structural long-term changes. Are there any other areas where the state should look at, where you believe the state should be looking at the budget to not only help this year, but also to help in future years to avoid these types of situations from arising again?
Well, obviously we have to look at spending and what is sustainable at this current level. We got, unfortunately, trapped into some bad habits of propping up spending, handing out more special tax deals, and relying on $100 oil to keep our coffers full. You can't really have proper risk management at the state level, where we have to balance the budget and lower tax rates while you increase special tax giveaways and crony capitalism. So we now have to confront, okay, what is the level of spending we can afford, and how much is that decrease going to be a part of an overall budget plan? There's obvious savings that can be met in state government. I personally don't believe there aren't any more savings to be found in K through 12 education funding. Revenues for them are down 13% since 2009. Their student population is up 40,000, and there's a shortage of 1,000 teachers. So part of what you have to do in a ugly economic environment like this is not only look at how to deal with this situation, but lay the groundwork for what's going to produce more growth and higher paying jobs and more revenue in the future. So I think we have to be really careful with targeted spending cuts, trying to keep K through 12 education funding as level as possible, and have enough of these financial reform items in place so we can kick off a teacher pay raise.
Do you see a teacher pay raise happening this legislative session?
Well, I know if I had my way and we could actually implement a wide variety of these financial reform options, there certainly is a reasonable way to kick off a $500 to $1,000 teacher pay raise that would be part of a plan to get them up to or past the regional average. Whether we can get all branches of a government to agree on a bold, aggressive approach to financial reform, I don't know yet.
What do you think of the 1 cent sales tax proposal for teacher salaries?
I am opposed to the 1 cent sales tax because it doesn't address the problems that we have in our financial management system as it is now. We've had other dedicated funding things for education in the past, whether it was the lottery or gambling, and what matters is the total amount you appropriate at the end of the day, not one particular item that's going to be dedicated towards education. So I think it's a bad idea. It'll hurt our local cities, and it doesn't address the fundamental financial management reforms we need to address.
It sounds like you probably have to be getting to the Senate here in just a minute. Before you go, I do want to get kind of your thoughts. I mean, if you had to grade the session so far on dealing with this process, what grade would you give the legislature so far?
Well, I think it's too early for a grade at this point, but I'm very proud of my colleagues in the Senate, particularly the members of the Senate Finance Committee, who were willing to put all sorts of options out on the table, vote on some aggressive ideas, take some of the licks and arrows that came from folks that didn't really understand what we were doing when we were trying to put everything out on the table to get some financial numbers and to get some feedback from the community. So I think the Senate and Senate Republicans are proving to be very good leaders at the moment to really address broad, strong, aggressive reform. And if the other branches of government follow us, by the end of session, I'll be willing to give us an A.
That's State Senator Mike Mazey in an interview recorded in his Capitol office last Tuesday. You can find this conversation on our website, kgou.org. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect the views of KGOU, our staff, or the University of Oklahoma's Board of Regents, which holds our broadcast license. I'm Jacob McClelland. Thanks for listening.